Today on Arts and Letters, we'll be talking with musicians Kelly and Donna Mulholland about their musical project, Cane Hill. About the town of Cane Hill, which played an important role in the early settlement days of Northwest Arkansas.
I grew up in Northwest Arkansas, yet I did not know that Cane Hill at one time was the population center. And it's one of the best kept secrets, and that's one thing that this project is trying to counteract. We hear from many people after going to our concert, they often like to go for a Sunday drive over to Cane Hill, and they take our album with us and they're listening to us.
Oh, and drive through
the town. Like a treasure hunt.
When they get to Cane Hill, it's possible to find some remnant, some artifact, some building for every single song.
Still on the Hill and Cane Hill on Arts and Letters.
When I was a kid, my appendix burst. They rushed me off to old Doc Bean. Sent me to the hospital. Said it was the worst case he'd ever seen. Took 3 long years, 4 eyes. Okay, I'd visit Doc Bean most every day. Always had a special task for me. Seemed to enjoy my company. 7 weeks was my command. I loved being Doc Bean's right hand.
From the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, I'm J. Bradley Minnick, and welcome to Arts and Letters, a program providing opportunities for the celebration of the arts and humanities. Today, we'll be talking with Donna and Kelly Mulholland of the musical group Still on the Hill about their collection of songs that capture the essence of the Arkansas community, Cane Hill. In this episode, we'll take a walk down Main Street and hear tales from the Civil War days to the Trail of Tears, and we'll end up at the Fountain on the Square. Cane Hill is, in one sense, every town USA, with its main street, its college, and its town doctor.
I recall one day Doc got a call. He had a Model A Ford. At the time, I wasn't in school, just loafing around, so I'd ask him if he'd let me drive.
Let me take her fast, she'd go up and down that county road.
And from that day on, I'd drive him around. I knew the back roads of every town.
He laughed every time I step on the gas.
Driving that car made me feel like a man. Doc had some problems with his hands. He couldn't keep them both trembling. When a man got shot with a double barrel gun, we fixed him real good before the day was done. With my steady hands and Doc's watchful eyes, I pulled a dozen pellets from that poor man's hide. And let me say right here, when someone called the office or someone was in need of help, never did Doc ask, "Can you pay? Do you have insurance?" Never was that a question. It was the Great Depression. Doc just took care of him.
But on the other hand, Cane Hill weaves itself around a deep history of stories unlike any other. With yards of calico, tiny metallic shoes, and J.D. Wilbur's pottery.
I joined the army and was off to war. My dad had a stroke while I was gone. Till he died, Doc cared for him. He was always there to spell my mom. Finest man I'd ever known. When his own wife died, he was left all alone. I begged him to move out west with me. I'd take care of him, keep him company. Nothing ever made me feel so grand than for me to be Doc Bean's right-hand man. Doc never did leave them Ozark Hills, and my heart was heavy as I drove away. Man, I never did see him again, but I thought about him every day. And I hope when I make it to the promised land, I can be Doc Bean's right-hand man. Again.
So heat up a nice warm slice of Cousin Annie's apple pie and prepare yourself for a slice of Ozark history on Arts and Letters.
We did it.
All right.
So, Donna and Kelly Mulholland from Still on the Hill, Cane Hill. Welcome to Arts and Letters.
We're honored to be here again.
That's
awesome.
Absolutely. Very happy to be here.
So that song was Doc Bean's right-hand man.
As much as it is about Doc Bean, it's really about his sidekick, this young boy who just really caught our imagination.
Joseph Stevens.
Yeah.
We did that in harmony.
You know, one thing we love about this story is that every little community had a doctor, kind of like Doc Bean.
Yeah.
So when they hear our song, they filter it through that lens of whoever was
their
doctor.
Yeah, whoever was their little country doctor.
But in this particular case, this young boy who got very ill when he was young and became a close friend of Doc Bean's, pretty soon was his sidekick and then became his driver, which, you know, at 14 or 15 years old, driving the Model A around all over the...
Yeah, and he would actually, when Doc Bean had a tremor, he would mix his medicines and actually help him perform surgeries sometimes.
Yeah, because Doc Bean must have had Parkinson's or something, and his hands would shake, and so the boy became his hands, and he would just instruct the boy. This is all true stuff.
Running on down to the mercantile as the sun was coming up. If I swept the front porch clean, I'd get me a soda pop. Sometimes I'd get a peppermint or a salty pretzel stick, a pickle from a barrel or a rope of licorice. And then I'd visit old Doc Bean, he'd get his stethoscope, let me hear his heart beating steady and slow. Then he'd ask about my ma and how we was doing. Never ask about my grades, cause I did not like school.
Tell us just about Cane Hill. It's a town that still exists. And I love the liner that you wrote, and I just want to read this. Mm-hmm. I think it's so beautifully written. The town of Cane Hill played an important role in the early settlement days of Northwest Arkansas. The Civil War, the Trail of Tears, the rise of the apple industry, and other events left a rich history and countless stories to be told. We've attempted to capture some of these stories in song for this collection, Cane Hill.
That's right.
My next stop was the Cooperage. I watched them bend them staves. Nothing but the finest oak, clear, straight, and aged. Sturdy apple barrels all lined up in a row. I dreamed that I might work there someday when I was grown. You'd mostly find me barefoot, but today I wore my boots. I was mighty proud of them, they're made by Mr. Tool. And his finest leather cowboy boots were shipped way out west. He said that mine were seconds, but to me they were the best. Sometimes this world seemed like rusted tin, but on Main Street, Cane Hill, life was golden.
You know, I've lived in Northwest Arkansas most of my life. I grew up in Northwest Arkansas. Yet I did not know that Cane Hill at one time was the population center. And it's one of the best kept secrets. And that's one thing that this project is trying to counteract. It just kind of got left behind. Fayetteville, Rogers, and Bentonville all overtook Cane Hill at some point.
Railroad came through and bypassed them. And
during the Civil War, it was the dominant town in Northwest Arkansas, and it has a very rich history. And there's a historical society there, or a board, that has come together, made up of people who grew up in Cane Hill and have deep roots in that area. And they just have such a reverence for history and their past, and they really wanted the story to be told. And they're in the midst of rebuilding the entire town.
That blacksmith was the biggest man that I had ever seen. Swinging that old hammer, boys, he'd make that anvil ring. But his shop was hot as blazes, and I would not stay there long. My next stop was a loafer's bench, I'd wave and move along. That's where the old men gathered, and I'd stop and sit a spell.
taught me spitting and whittling, and I learned their stories well. And it felt so good just being there and sitting at their feet. Hard for me to come up with a memory that's sweet. Sometimes this world seemed like rusted tin, but on Main Street, Cane Hill, life was golden.
Tell us just a little bit about Main Street. You know, so from the opening song, you kind of put yourself in the shoes of an 8-year-old
boy. We kind of wanted to, when we were going to do the live program and stuff, we thought it would be the most interesting thing to start the whole project with imagining walking down Main Street back in the day and all the buildings that used to be there, the Cooperage, which was where they would bend barrel staves for the apples, Doc Bean's place,
the blacksmith shop, the pottery shop, or the factory, J.D. Wilbur's factory. Also, there was something that inspired that song was a few photographs of the fountain in the center of the square. So right in the center of Main Street was a stone fountain, and that was the only source of water in those days. Huh. So if you wanted water, you had to go there, and everybody knew that spot.
It was the gathering place.
And there's a wonderful picture of a little boy standing on top of a remnant of what was left of the fountain. Mm-hmm. And so that, in our mind, that was where it started, that little boy.
Golden as the double eagle coin father's pocket. Golden as the chain that's holding mama's locket. Golden as the morning sun shining across the land. You can't measure these treasures or hold them in your hand. Sometimes this world seems like rusted tin, but on Main Street, Cane Hill, life was golden.
So he just gets off school and goes down Main Street and visits all the shops. The loafer's bench, which I love, in front of the bank, there would always be a bench where the old men would sit and whittle and tell stories. And
then towards the end, there's a little prank that he likes to perform at the fountain, where he puts his finger over one of the pipes and it makes it turn into a big fountain and shoots up
in the air like fireworks.
So that's the final verse ends with that.
My day would likely wind up at the fountain on the square. That cool, clear water brought folks from everywhere. Sometimes I'd plug the pipe up when no one was aware. An enormous stream of water would spew into the air. Everyone would cheer and shout, enjoying the display. I think they knew who did it, but never would they say. And every day, all day long, I'd make all my rounds. I think I knew every soul in that little town. Sometimes this world seems like rusted tin, but on Main Street, Cane Hill, life was golden, golden.
This is Arts and Letters. We're listening to Donna and Kelly Mulholland from Still on the Hill talk about their musical project, Cane Hill. We'll be back in a moment. This is Arts and Letters. Let's return to our discussion with Donna and Kelly Mulholland about their musical project, Cane Hill, as we learn about its historical college from the Mock Sisters.
We grew up in my two sisters and me. My name is Molly, I love to draw. Sister Callie shook and say, lovely Mary, Sister Mary, she could do everything. In the year of 1875, we were sent to Cane Hill Town. Mama said the college opened up its doors, women were finally allowed. Papa said, Mary, pretty Mary, someday she'll make us proud. We learned arithmetic, astronomy, natural philosophy, rhetoric, chemistry, botany, and biology.
So with this one with the college, let's just talk about it a little bit since we're
sure.
At a college. You didn't want to write a list or a litany of elements of the college that were just miscellaneous facts about it. So what you decided was to take a different approach.
When you go to the museum, there are several paintings by the Mock Sisters in there. And I just thought it would be really cool to tell the whole story of the college through the filter and the eyes of these Mock Sisters.
I was jealous of my sister Mary. She got to study art. Major Quisenberry was the finest teacher anywhere around these parts. Miss Betty Welsh taught Sister Callie piano and guitar. Mary had a canvas white as snow, a special painting box. Her room it reeked of turpentine, a smell I loved so much. Her brushes made of camel hair, she'd never let me touch. I was the youngest member of the family. No one gave much attention to me. All the honor and the glory went to Mary and Callie.
And Mock Sisters, you say that is funny Mock. Because I think of Mock, but their names
their
are
last name was Mock.
Mary and Molly Mock.
And especially given the importance of Cane Hill as a women's college.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and so there were three sisters, and they were from Prairie Grove.
Yeah,
that's right.
Absolutely.
And there was a bit of a rivalry between the sisters, and that's kind of what Donna picked up on for this particular song. And that's a good example of her having to fill in some blanks with her imagination.
I did have to make up some of the story. It's a little fictionalized, because we don't really know that much about the three Mock Sisters except from that document and the paintings that are in the museum. So
there are some paintings of them?
Not of the girls, but the paintings that they painted.
Oh, that they painted.
Yes, they painted.
Yes.
Oh,
and they're precious.
Saturday morning when Mary was gone, I felt a fire burning in my soul. Went to her room and I started to paint like a madman out of control. I painted scenes from Cane Hill Town till Mary came back home. I held my breath when she opened the door, waited for her angry store. I took her apron off and I hung it on a nail, promised I'd paint no more. Smile spread across Mary's face, her words shook me to the core. They take my breath away. I bet they're gonna hang in a museum one day. Then I heard Mary say out loud, someday, Molly, you'll make us proud.
Now, by the way, if you go to Cane Hill, don't expect it to be a town, because it's really not anymore. Hardly anybody lives there. It's really the remnant of what used to be a town. But nevertheless, there's some very grand buildings there, like, for instance, the college. It was the first institution of higher learning.
It said, the first institution of higher learning in the state of Arkansas.
And it was the first college that allowed women. I do think that's really pretty special.
But it has a really murky history, because it burned down twice before it was finally built as a brick structure. And it was burned down after the Civil War, after the Battle of Prairie Grove. And then it was falling down for a third time. So it's had a really murky history, but somehow or another it survived. And there's another song on the album called The Bell. And the bell is also very much about the college. The bell sits right next to the college.
In a bell tower, huge bell
in
tower.
The early 1850s, I was cast out of bronze, proudly mounted on a steamboat called Grape Shot. We plied the Ohio, the Arkansas, and Mississippi. My song rang out from Pittsburgh to New Orleans. When the fall got too thick, I rang out a warning. I rang to wake the crew when the sun rose each morning. I rang
one time that bell sat on the college, at the top of it, until the Civil War, when it was torn down or burned down and toppled to the ground. And the bell has an incredibly strange history, so that became a song as well.
When the water was rising,
around Van Buren, and my voice would fall silent.
from the college all the way to Cone Creek.
The bell that is actually in that belfry now started off in the Arkansas River on a riverboat. And that riverboat sunk in a storm over by Van Buren. And it was underwater for a long time, and the folks over at Cane Hill needed a bell, and they'd heard about that, and so they got a diving bell arranged to go bring the bell back up to the surface, and they took it by oxen cart
over the mountain
all the way into the Ozarks, hundreds of miles, took it all the way to Cane Hill.
And it was so fun to actually, when we decided to write that song, I wrote it as if I was the bell telling you its story. So I'm telling the whole story of the bell's history as if I'm the bell.
When the Civil War was ending, they burned my belfry down. As Cane Hill was blazing, I lay there on the ground. My voice again was silenced, for I was badly cracked. They sent me to the foundry where I would be recast. For many years I rang to summon folks to church.
At the end of the bell song, we actually took some recording equipment and we recorded the bell. I went inside the bell tower and rang the bell. So at the end, you'll hear the actual the bell.
And so what you guys kind of did was you did really extensive research. You looked at books, you looked at journal articles, you interviewed people from the town, and you created songs from the perspectives of people who had lived.
And the first step was the research.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so fun. Mm-hmm. And the bunch of different ways that we pursue that. One, our favorite is with oral history. Just we had interviews with old timers who grew up there and had strong memories of the place and that still live in the area. Then we used little pamphlets that have been written that tell historical stories. And then thirdly, just artifacts in the museum.
Oh, yeah.
Several songs on the collection just came from having observed an artifact.
Yeah.
Like a piece of pottery.
Or a shoe.
Or a shoe. How funny, yeah, of all things.
I used to teach reading and writing and arithmetic. I was quite gentle. I never taught to the whip of a hickory stick.
That's kind of a far-fetched story, but it's very charming.
I enjoyed that one so much. In the museum, there is a little teeny shoe that looks just like one of the shoes from Monopoly, but it was given to a teacher, a Cane Hill teacher, from one of her students way before Monopoly was ever invented. So it was in this little glass case, and I just, like, that shoe has to be one of the songs.
Yeah.
The most memorable day of my life was in the fall of 1918. Gave the sweetest gift to me, a tiny, perfect, metallic shoe that might have been a bracelet charm. So I took a fine sliver of twine and wrapped it round my arm. I never forgot his precious smile. He was grinning ear to ear. I don't know where he got the charm, but I kept it for all my years. It was an affirmation of how much I meant to him. I was his teacher, a mighty fine teacher, way, way back when.
And nobody knows for sure whether that shoe really inspired the Monopoly piece.
No, but
what
I
all know about.
I like to think it did.
But yeah,
somehow
we just play like it does anyway, and that works fine. You know, we're not academic in our approach. We try to be accurate as best we can, but a lot of times there simply aren't enough details, and so we have to fill in the blanks.
Right. And that's part of the folk process.
Now I'm long gone, time marches on, the little shoe remains. Attached to an old yellow piece of parchment that bears my inscription and name. It hangs on the wall in a museum, shrouded in mist. A lifetime of teaching. That was my greatest gift.
Where did you find that?
At the museum. The curator of the museum, he was just like our right-hand man. He just, any question we had, he would find stuff for us and give it to us and show us. And it was really, really wonderful working with Lawrence.
What's your name?
Lawrence McElroy. I'm now the Director of Arts and Culture, as well as the museum curator, and I'm full-time.
So when did you come to Cane Hill?
I've been here about 4 years.
And why has the history captured you so?
It's a combination. This place is paradise. The land, the people, the history, remarkable first. I was taken with it. There's lots of historic firsts right here in this little place. The first Sunday school in the Arkansas Territories. We had one of the first four-year college institutions here. Had the first public library was right here.
First college that admitted women, too.
That's right. Right, absolutely.
And the March 7th, 1836 Arkansas Gazette says,
Cane Hill is one of the most densely settled neighborhoods in the West. There are 4 dry goods stores, 1 grocery, 2 wagon makers, 4 blacksmith shops, a post office, 1 church, an excellent school, 1 sawmill, and 3 grist mills.
A child without an education is like a bird without wings. And knowledge without wisdom is a song that never sings.
Yeah, so let's go to Cousin Annie's apple pie. Okay. This town was known for its apples.
Yes, absolutely. It was like the apple capital of Arkansas back in the day.
You know, a lot of folks are probably wondering where this town is. Cane Hill is very, very close to 2 towns that are better known nowadays, and that is Prairie Grove and Lincoln. So both of those towns are west of Fayetteville and only about, 20 minutes west. And then just 7 miles south of Lincoln is Cane Hill. Cane Hill used to be a much bigger town than both Prairie Grove and Lincoln, but now it's much, much smaller.
Well, Lincoln is now sometimes thought of as the apple capital. They have an apple festival in the fall, but Cane Hill was the capital back then.
Right. And it was also the home for some of the heirloom varieties of apples that have become pretty obscure these days.
Howard Sweet and Wilson June.
Arkansas Black. These are delicious apples that... Better than the delicious apples.
We researched apples. We learned a lot about the stripes on the different kinds of apples.
And so this is another example of where Donald had to get very creative because we didn't have a lot of detail on a story. We did have some names.
There was a little book in the museum, and the person who wrote the book said that when he was a young boy, he loved his Cousin Annie's apple pie more than anything. And Cousin Annie, she went to the World's Fair in Chicago and brought their apples and won first place. And in the story, it said that she rode the Ferris wheel. And so I had to take all those little pieces from that little story he wrote and put it from a girl's perspective because I'm singing it. And so it's Cousin Annie's apple pie. But I took some liberties.
So she very much wrote the music and the lyrics, and I wrote the little instrumental waltz that intermingles with it throughout, starts it, and you'll hear that.
And you play on the ukulele.
Yeah, this is a very sweet little tender thing. I play a ukulele, and Donna plays the fiddle on this. 1, 2, 3.
So the book was The Cane Hill Story, right? 1825 to 1969. I suppose you guys read that book. Yes. Author Conroe R. Miller talks about his love of apples, picking as a boy. You changed it to a girl.
Yes.
And it's a story about Cousin Annie who made apple butter and dried apple pie. What's a dried apple pie?
I've never tasted one. It sounds I bet you they dehydrate the apples or sun-dry the apples and then make little turnover pies.
Annie once traveled way up to Chicago to the World's Fair in 1893. She rolled the Ferris wheel up and down. From the top she could see for miles around. Our Arkansas apples, they took the first place for color, variety, texture, and taste. Every my heart filled with song, gonna help pick them apples all the day long, dreaming of cinnamon and spice and causing any sweet pie.
You're listening to Arts and Letters. We're talking with Kelly and Donna Mulholland about the town of Cane Hill and Aunt Annie's apples.
And Annie said, I love you a bushel and a peck, a bushel and a peck, and a hug around the neck.
I love that. That's so nice. Awesome.
Thank you.
I love the uke.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's fun to play a tender little waltz like that. Mm-hmm. That was fun.
We'll be back in a moment. I'm Jay Bradley Minnick, and you're listening to Arts and Letters. Let's return to Kelly and Donna Mulholland from Still on the Hill as they talk about their musical project, Cane Hill. When you guys were researching and doing this, what were some of the stories that you left out?
Ooh.
Okay, there's some dicey things having to do with racism.
Pull back the dry corn husk. Put golden coins in perfect rows. Then lay the husk back down. Carefully so nothing shows. I've earned all this wealth you see from running the mill. And I'm terrified to travel north. There's men who earn their keep by robbing men like me.
And there's some decisions to be made because the world looks different now, you know, mm-hmm. and we're more knowledgeable and more worldly now, obviously, as a culture about racism. And so, you know, for instance, there was a small community of black folks outside of Cane Hill that we could not find much about, and we would have loved to have written more about that.
Sure.
But racism does kind of touch a couple of these stories in an interesting way, and we had to decide how to deal with that. One was
The Yard of Calico.
Yeah.
Okay, so that song has kind of a dicey relationship between a gentleman who owned slaves, and then after the Civil War, the slaves worked for him, and
he had the mill.
There's a bank in Kansas City where my money will be safe. Take my sturdy wagon and leave at the break of day. Leave at the break of day.
And this man had quite a bit of money, and he wanted to deposit his money up in a bank in Kansas City, but it was a dangerous trip to go to Kansas City with a lot of money. So what he did was he had this black man who had been a former slave of his drove a wagon all the way to Kansas City with the gold all hidden in the corn.
Well, you know, you walked an interesting line. So the story says, before there was a bank in Cane Hill, the miller, J.R. Prenett, needed to send money to the bank in Kansas City. Story has it they would send a four-horse team in a wagon and they needed a great deal of corn to feed the horses along the way. The corn provided an excellent hiding place for the money. An ex-slave, Uncle Charlie King, drove the team for the task. Charlie would return with freight, and you researched what kind of freight was common back then and discovered that calico fabric was the most popular for the ladies.
Right.
Put all the gilded corn just right up front behind the seat in your faded overalls. A simple man is all they'll see. Poverty and coal black skin, just free from slavery. They won't suspect my gilded corn and just might let you be. Charlie King, my trusted friend, a golden corn before you go. Buy a gal some leather boots and a yard of calico, some lovely calico.
And so that, okay, that's a double-edged sword. It shows some trust of his friend, but it also shows his willingness for his friend to
take on a dangerous task.
2 weeks he has been gone. No news is good news, so they say. The miller counts the hours, and for his safe return he prayed. But he never should have risked his life for money in the bank. And if Charlie makes it safely back, the good Lord he can thank.
And you know, at the very end of that song, we very carefully chose our words to show that this gentleman who had sent the black man on this very dangerous mission actually felt a little remorse for having done it, and kind of wondered if that had been wise in the first place, even though it turned out a happy ending. We tried to make that apparent. There was some questionability about whether that was a great idea.
And that's what we hope.
Last evening at the mill, I was working overtime, while thoughts of my dear friend weighed ever heavy on my mind. I heard my horses whinnying down the old dirt road. At last my wagon came in view, and with a lighten load, Charlie King, I cried, I'm glad you made it home. He smiled and showed me leather boots and pretty calico, lovely calico.
And Donna, when we talk about calico, you embellish, and it's not necessarily calico, but fabric and photo images of each song.
A picture paints a thousand words.
Yeah.
And so we joke, we call it our low-tech PowerPoint. You know, and a real quilter would look at them and just kind of scoff at me because I'm not a quilter. But I have images of these people printed on fabric. I have a place that prints them large for me. And then I make a border around the edge. So they're embellished images that I hold up before we play each song so they can actually see the person or place that we're singing about in our low-tech way.
And when this was commissioned, the board at Cane Hill, the historic board, they asked for a double set. Mm-hmm. So Donna made two quilts for every single
Donna.
Picture, and they now retain a full set, and they have them on display.
Well, what I like, you know, is you don't just show this idyllic town. You guys were very moved by an article written by Susan Young called Finding
Alsay Timberlake,
and this dealt with the Trail of Tears.
Lonely bright red autumn leaf floated down from a maple tree, landed on a grave in front of me at the windblown Carnahan Cemetery. A lonesome breeze whisked me back in time to 1837, Lord, I felt like crying. I could see families living in fear on the Trail of Tears.
That is, it kind of shines a light on the fact that Cane Hill was one of the earliest settlements in Northwest Arkansas as well. So that would have been in the 20s. And so the Trail of Tears was soon after that, in the 30s. and the Trail of Tears wound right through Cane Hill.
Wow.
And so there are some historic graves there that are suspected to be people from the Trail of Tears.
The Timberlake family were from Tennessee's Cherokee family, and they walked the Trail of Tears and lost one of their boys on the way.
The Timberlakes, they were Cherokee, forced to travel west from Tennessee, across Kentucky and through Illinois. They'd already buried their youngest boy.
Elsie Timberlake apparently was 13, and they have a receipt for her coffin. She was buried somewhere in Cane Hill. And Susan Young gave me an actual journal of the man who marched them, kept a diary day by day of the things that these people ate.
After 10 weeks, they were tattered and worn. Nothing to eat but fodder and corn. Winter had arrived, and with its chill, daughter Elsie taking it in. An old receipt had been found, showed her coffin was purchased in Cane Hill Town. She had only lived but 13 years when her young soul left the Trail of Tears. The tragic deeds of yesterday left unmarked stones along the way. Shallow graves beside the road hold countless stories left untold.
Fodder and hay. They ate fodder and hay. Was written on page after page, and so we wove that into the song as well.
So, Donna, tell us about the lyrics to this one. It must have been tough to write.
Yeah,
it was. Well, one of the board members took us up and showed us a cemetery. May have been the right cemetery. There's no telling, really, for sure. But he showed us a historic cemetery.
The Carnahan Cemetery. But they weren't sure that that's where she was actually buried. They think that it's an unknown grave somewhere.
But we had to use that as a reference. And, yeah. And Donna, when she writes a song, she needs a touchstone.
Showered me with bright red leaves. I'm thinking that I heard her whispering. And I found myself down. In my pocket for to keep. I'll press it in a book to remain a reminder of Elsie Timberlake's name.
And we know that from experience. She has to feel something. And so we went to that graveyard, and there she saw things that stirred her up and became the images, you know, just like a leaf. Mm-hmm. Falling.
An autumn leaf laying on the ground. And
it's a sad song. It just reflects the sadness of the whole situation. It's a very tender song. It's really meant to honor this young Cherokee girl.
And all the people.
And all people who perished on that trail.
On the Trail of Tears.
And just a reminder of what a sad episode of American history this was. There's quite a few buildings in Cane Hill that still remain. There's a beautiful church. There's at least 3 or 4 homes, and then there's college. And the board has somehow managed to restore all these buildings to just absolutely beautiful structures. One of the old stores has been restored into, and recently they've opened an art museum, and they're doing regular art shows. One of the gallery shows that was really interesting was they've unearthed quite a few pots made by this potter named J.D.
Wilbur. But not only him, other potters from the region.
From the 1800s.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a story. J.D. Wilbur's factory.
Yes, J.D. Wilbur and his wife, and they actually came from Ohio. They weren't originally from Cane Hill, but they came to Cane Hill because it turns out that somehow or another they had found out that the clay that occurred in Cane Hill was suitable for pottery.
When the Civil War ended, Cane Hill began to grow. J.D. Wilbur and his wife moved from Ohio. He was thin as a rail. She was plump and round, and they made quite a stir when they came to town. He's come down south, he just had to see the perfect clay for making pottery. So he dug that clay from the cold, hard ground.
Said, I'm gonna be the potter of Cane Hill Town.
And he built a potter's wheel in a couple of days.
And a brick kiln to fire all the vessels he made.
Round and round like the potter's wheel of Cane Hill.
in earth and clay, hold the stories of yesterday.
A pug mill is a way of keeping the clay supple and moist and workable. And he rigged up a pug mill that was like an old turnstile.
From a sorghum mill used.
And he improvised this turnstile into a pug mill that was driven by a mule. So the mule would walk in circles and turn the clay.
And apparently course, all the kids just loved to go to his pottery factory and watch
the mule circler. Sure.
With a turnstile post from an old sorghum press, his contraption was pulled by his old mule Bess. Round and round, oh round, old Bessie would walk till that good clod clay was smooth and soft.
Mixing bowls, canning jars for jam, anything and everything to put things in.
With a watchful eye for what town folks use, and I wonder if there's some that got filled up with booze. And the kids love to watch as the wheel spins round.
Mr. Wilbur was a potter of Cane Hill Town.
Wheel of Time spins round and round like the potter's wheel of Cane Hill Town.
Vessels cast in earth and clay, hold the stories of yesterday.
So this is a banjo song, but you also have the fiddle.
Yeah.
Music-wise, this is a strange texture, you might say. The melody reminds me of a British Isles kind of a melody, in a way. And I use the banjo in a very percussive way, which is really doesn't have any precedent that I know of.
Well, the banjo is kind of like a drum. So
it is a drum.
He kind of drums on the banjo.
Yeah. Right.
In a playful way, we were using this idea that the vessels hold the stories.
Sure.
And they do, in a way. They do, in a way, because that was everyday life.
Now the wheel spins fast and gone are the days when a town needs a man turning jars of clay. But as time goes on, just wait and see. They will outlast you, they will outlast me.
There are pieces of his kiln that can still be found in a farmer's field near Cane Hill Town.
And a handful of pots bearing Wilbur's name set on sills of a museum, they're all that remains. He was laid to rest in that cold, hard ground, in that good red clay of Cane Hill Town. Time spins round and round like the potter's wheel of Cane Hill Town. Vessels cast in earth and clay, all the stories of yesterday. Go round and round, round and round, round and round, round and round. Go round and round, round and round, round and round, round and round.
Amazing.
That's what we end the show with. And we get the whole audience to sing the round and round part and clap and kind of it's just
stomping along at the end there.
We like to think about all the pottery holding the stories. We make a joke that we are archaeologists because archaeologists, you know, if they dig up a site, they might find bones or
tools.
But
the most likely thing they're going to find in any archaeological site is pottery.
Yeah.
You know,
sure.
Because it's one of the most enduring things that mankind does. And I think it's interesting also that those pieces were, even though they're beautiful to look at, they were not made as art. That was not the point. They were made for functional reasons. Mm-hmm. But they are beautiful, so what I consider that accidental art, which is a rare thing. You know, it's always a nice thing to find that.
It's such a nice arc because you begin with the little boy walking through town and then you meet all the characters along the way. And in the end, there's the pottery which kind of lives after us.
That's exactly right.
So if you could say something to Doc Bean or Cousin Annie or Alcie, what would you tell them?
I wish I could have sat down and met you and heard the stories right from your heart. You know, I wish I could have been there, but this is as close as I can get.
There's so many aspects of community. It is community. I think that's one thing we're starved for in modern times. You know, in this day and age, everybody's all holed up in their house watching television. But what we've left behind is community. Mm-hmm. And Cane Hill is an exceptional example of a functional community. And so I think somehow in our little collection of songs, you feel that.
Sometimes this world seems like rusted tin, but on Main Street, Cane Hill, life was golden, golden.
Broadcast from the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, you've been listening to Arts and Letters. Thanks for joining us. To check out past episodes, go to artsandlettersradio.org. Leave us a comment there and let us know what you've thought about the program. Thank you to Lawrence McElroy, the historic Cane Hill Museum curator and a super accomplished artist himself, for the interview. Thank you to Sticky's Rock and Roll Chicken Shack for keeping music alive and well in Arkansas. Thank you to the Four Points by Sheraton, Little Rock, Midtown, for providing accommodations to guests on Arts and Letters. Generous funding for this episode was provided by the Arkansas Humanities Council and the National Endowment for the Humanities. Thank you to Kelly and Donna Mulholland of Still on the Hill for the amazing collection of songs about Cane Hill and for so generously sharing their understanding of this piece of Americana that isn't so far gone as we might think. For Arts and Letters, I'm J. Bradley Minnick. Let's heed the words of Sherwood Anderson from his seminal book, Winesburg, Ohio. The boy is walking through the street of his town. He's thinking of the future and of the figure he will cut in the world. Ambitions and regrets awake within him. Suddenly, something happens. He stops under a tree and waits for a voice calling his name.